Hey everybody, welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and spread that information onto the masses.
I have a degree in biology with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior. I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. I want to pass the knowledge I've gained over the years on to everyone out there. Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 36. On this week's episode, we interview Felicia Gualda, and she is a healer and integration coach. She approaches health from a whole different angle from us. We obviously come at it in the form of nutrition and training, things like that. She comes at it more from a, a healer standpoint, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, kind of the whole body's connected, mind, body, spirit. She's more about that mind and spirit side.
Yeah, and she's very smart. She knows what she's talking about. So I hope you guys like this interview. But first, let's do a little check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
So over the weekend, I turned 31. But honestly, I feel better.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But I honestly feel better than I did at 21. I'm leaner now, just probably overall healthier than I was at 21. So even though, like, my age is getting higher, I'm aging backwards. I even feel better than I did this time a year ago. Like, it's kind of crazy. So for my birthday, we went down south, visited with a couple friends, my girlfriend's, like, brother, and we went to Disneyland. And, you know, I ate pretty good, but didn't, like, just try and limit myself. Obviously, if you're in Disneyland, there's just sugar and desserts everywhere. So I had a little bit of that. And
what about those big turkey legs?
Didn't mess with that. We had
those are there though, right?
Yeah, they have them there. Okay. We ate at one of the nicer restaurants in Disneyland. Okay. Had a decent sized lunch, had a big breakfast before we went, and yeah, we just kind of like had some snacks. There was like some meat skewers at one spot, so just kind of got a bunch of those.
Smart.
So yeah, it was just kind of on like the whole carnivore and cookies type diet for this weekend.
That's what happens to me too whenever I go anywhere. Yeah.
But one thing I do when I eat out, because I don't, for whatever reason, I don't have fish in my, like, diet at home. I don't know, I can't make salmon very good. I've never really been able to perfect that. So every time we go out to eat, that's usually what I order, is salmon. Just because I don't make it good at home, I'll always be impressed with it when I go out, because it's better than what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend ordered a steak when we went out, and she was not only disappointed with the size, it was a 7-ounce steak. I don't remember the last time I've had a 7-ounce steak as a meal. That's a snack.
That's an appetizer.
Yeah, so she was disappointed with that. And then it was also just like, we make better steaks at home. I'm just like, that's why I never order steak. Because, like, we're always going to be disappointed.
Oh, yeah. I know. I had, not to cut off your whole story, but there's a steakhouse here locally in town. And obviously, I'm like Mr. Steak Guy. I go there. Super disappointed. It's super tiny. And I'm like, oh, my steaks are better than this.
Yeah. Oh, if I'm going to do beef when I'm out, like, I'll order a hamburger.
Yeah.
Because you can't mess up a hamburger, and you're going to get a decent-sized portion.
Some bacon, maybe some avocado on it, something like that.
Oh, we got pretty lucky. We got there was a Korean barbecue place right next to where we were staying. So we ate there the first night, and it was all you can eat for $26.
Perfect.
Well, unfortunately, we got there, like, 45 minutes before they closed. So it was all she could eat. It was, like, half of what I could eat.
Oh, they just ran out of stuff?
We ran out of time there.
Oh, okay.
We didn't, like, it was, like, 10:15 when we left. They closed at 10. I could have been eating till 11.
Okay.
Like, I just didn't want to just stay there overall.
Yeah.
There was a table of four guys next to us. I think we out-ate them.
Good.
And she tapped out, like, after, like, two plates. I just kept going and going.
What was your main thing?
It was like a beef brisket.
Okay.
It was like chopped like really thin, cooked really fast. And I was like, oh, this is perfect.
Yeah. Just
throw that on the grill, take it off.
You can do it like continuously.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing.
Yeah, 100%.
They had a couple other things that were good. Trying to remember what else. Have you had duck wings before?
I had duck before. I don't know about duck wings.
We had duck wings at this restaurant in Disneyland. The best wings I've ever had in my life.
Were they oily?
I mean, they were kind of gamey, so they're a little bit darker meat.
Okay.
It was just, they fell off the bone, were just so delicious.
Oh, maybe I need to try that, because the regular duck I had, was nasty as shit. I did not like it.
Well, they're leaner usually, like, there's not a whole lot of meat on them, yeah. But the wing part was delicious, and it's like really dark meat because they're actually using their wings. So yeah. They have a lot more mitochondria there, a lot more fat in them than like a typical chicken wing.
Yeah, who hasn't flown ever?
I mean, it can jump kind of high sometimes.
Maybe, yeah.
So that's it for me. What's new with you this week?
I mean, same old for me. Still, this cut's going really well. Like, I think I talked about last week, I upped the, I guess, like, phase two. So my protein's elevated, my fat's decreased a little bit. And it's honestly going better than I was expecting. It's not going as fast as my last cut because I was way more aggressive with the calorie restriction with my last cut. But this time it's kind of like a slow and steady burn, and I feel good. I'm not starving, but I'm still getting leaner. And honestly, I'm just crazy surprised how well it's going, you know?
So you're still at, are you at 50-50?
Yeah, I'm a little, it's like 51, 52% protein.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little bit over. And, but yeah, damn near 50-50. And it's honestly going great. And if I need to step my game up and really start shedding some pounds, then I will up the protein and cut the calories a little bit. But if I don't have to, I won't. Like, there's no reason to do that if I don't have to. Because the first cut was very successful. But when you're that aggressive, you are going to lose some muscle mass with that fat mass. There's just no way around it. And I really want to try and avoid that this time and just slow and steady, get this fat off, but keep this muscle on. I mean, we work out all the time to maintain muscle, not lose muscle, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make any sense to try to like, cut muscle just to lose weight. So doing that. And I guess the biggest difference this week is you introduced a podcast to me, a Ben Greenfield podcast on carnivore with a guy, Paul Saladino.
Sounds good to me.
I don't know. Sounds good to me. And it was a great, great podcast. You want to talk about that just a little bit?
So it's a 2-hour podcast, which seems long, but honestly, it was not long enough. Every single argument that he had. So the way Ben did it, this episode, is he basically just like, hey, here's this argument. Like, do you need vitamin C? Paul Saladino, quick answer. No, you don't. Here's the reasons why. Next question, like, do you need fiber? Nope. Here's why. Like, are you worried about this vitamin? Just went through every single argument. So if you're wondering like if carnivore is right for you or why we should be eating a carnivore diet, this was the best source I've ever found. Like, I was very impressed. I don't get impressed that often anymore because I just listen to everybody, but I was really impressed with this guy.
So was I. He's very articulate. There are a few points that I didn't 100% agree with him. He's very big on nose to tail. So, and I feel like he kind of uses that as like a justification or almost like a crutch for the carnivore diet. Where like someone like Sean Baker just says, you know, you eat meat, you'll be okay. And I think there are a ton of people, well, I know there are a ton of people out there who do just eat muscle meat and are doing fine. You know, and by any means measured, they're extremely healthy. They're lean, they're young, they have energy, all that type of stuff. Actually, being young is a measure of health, and we're all fucking losing that, right? but you know what I mean? They're all doing well. So I don't 100% agree with that you have to eat nose to tail. Now, personally, I do eat as nose to tail as you can in today's society with organ meats. I eat organ meats every day with either heart or liver. And my argument is why not? It's cheaper, it tastes fine, and it's very nutritious. But I feel like he was saying that kind of just to hedge his bets. Do you know what I'm saying?
I kind of agree.
Because I agree with him.
Yeah.
But not wholeheartedly agree with him.
I think what you're saying is right. When if you're just eating ribeyes like Sean Baker, like you can be fine. Mm-hmm. But I think the way he laid it out was a little bit more optimal.
Yes. See, I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. And that's why I do incorporate organ meats. Like I think it is more optimal. And I think there are just a nutrition profile that our body can benefit from by eating organ meats. But I didn't like just the way he worded it, I guess. And he talked a lot about glycine and methionine and that muscle meats are actually low in glycine. And again, that is kind of true. Now, is there more glycine than methionine in muscle meat? There is. There's literally more glycine than methionine in muscle meat, okay? Now, does he know way more about the metabolic pathway of methionine? Yeah, listen to the podcast. He does. Okay, I understand that. And he talks about how methionine is used as like a methyl donor and glycine is used to kind of mitigate that and glycine is used for glutathione. But guess what methionine is too? Used for glutathione. It's not just glycine. So I don't know, that whole argument, not that I disagree with him, but it did spark interest in my brain to, okay, maybe I need to look into that a little bit. I don't know a lot about the relationship between glycine and methionine, so I have been looking. He just recommends like a collagen protein powder or bone broth or what else did he? I think that was it pretty much.
Yeah, he said he makes sure that he, when he has like a big steak,
like tendons,
that he's having either connective tissue or like bone broth or like a collagen supplement with it.
Yes, so that's what he does. And the thing is, like, every, if you think of our muscle strands, every muscle fiber is surrounded by collagen. It's surrounded, so, like, they can smooth and they can slide past each other smoothly. So, we are getting collagen with all our muscle meat. And are things different nowadays with how meat's processed and how, like, dry-aged beef and stuff like that is not as fresh as it used to be back in the day, like hunter-gatherers? You know, maybe we can get into that argument, but besides those two points, everything this man said was very impressive. I wished I was as articulate as he was, and honestly as confident as he is, because I wholeheartedly believe in the way I'm eating, and I think you know that.
Oh, definitely.
Like I've been preaching this for a while. I've been saying I'm aging in reverse for a while. Like, you really do feel a big difference, but I'm not as confident as this guy is. I'm not as confident as my knowledge as this guy is. But he is not afraid to step out there and say, this is what's going on, this is why it's happening, this is why it's right, or this is why it's wrong. So it's an awesome podcast. Please listen to it if you have any interest in the carnivore diet. Or if you're just, you think I'm crazy, listen to him and then maybe you can, I guess, educate yourself a little bit more into why I do what I do.
Yeah, definitely. He inspired me to start making my own bone broth. Because I've been buying it from the store for the longest time. And then just after listening to this, I was like, you know what? I could step up my game a little bit and I can make my own bone broth.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this anyway just because, like, bone broth has quite a bit of protein in it. And I don't really want to consume any protein until I'm, like, starting to consume my meals. Just so, like, my body's going, has more time to do cellular autophagy. So if I'm not eating protein, the demand for it's higher. So just to have, like, a higher demand for that, work out in a fasted state too. So yeah, I normally do bone broth while I'm, I don't know, like making a meal. It's kind of like as a little appetizer. So I've been kind of doing that. And yeah, after listening to this, I was like, you know what? I should step it up even more, make my own. So yeah, I definitely got a lot out of it.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for sharing that. It was awesome.
Yeah, we'll link an we'll link the episode in the show notes.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes. Yeah, it will be. But I think, that's about all that's new with me. Just training, just growing, and trying to be consistent. So let's get into that interview with Felicia. And just want to say, just listen, open your minds, open your ears. It's a very interesting topic, and it's honestly a huge hole in my knowledge base. And I'm fairly well educated on nutrition and working out techniques, things like that. But as far as getting the soul and mind to work in one and to be in unison, all those things, I personally don't know a lot about that. So, and I'm assuming most people out there are in the same boat as me. So just open your minds, open your ears, and hopefully you guys learn something.
So on today's podcast, we have Felicia Gualda. She's an intuitive healer and integration coach. I've known her for a long time. We went to school together at Cal State Long Beach, studied exercise science. And yeah, she's an all-around amazing person and a wonderful human being. So welcome to the show, Felicia.
Hi. Oh, thank you. That was so sweet.
Yeah, nice intro.
I wish everybody would introduce me like that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Well, you're worth it. Thank you for your time. Thank you. So what got you started on this integration coaching?
Okay, so I'll give you a little bit of background here. I'll try to give you the short version. There were a few things that were happening in my life that kind of pushed me onto this path. And I'll get into a little bit more of what that path is exactly a little later on. So basically, I had graduated from college. I had a degree. I ended up only working in my industry for about a year after I graduated and was not feeling fulfilled at all. I ended up bouncing around into several different industries for a while after that, just not really finding anything, like anywhere that I landed. And so at the same time, there were a few other areas of my life that just felt like I kept repeating certain patterns that weren't getting me anywhere in my career, in my relationship, in my living situation, in my financial situation. And it just felt like no matter what scenario I changed in my world, I kept experiencing the same kind of emotional response and the same kind of ending or transition out of each of these things. So really, I was just getting fed up with things not going the way that I wanted in life, even though I took all the steps you're supposed to take. I went to school, I got good grades. You know, when it comes to relationships, I dated and kept ending up with the wrong guys, to a point where I eventually just kind of gave up on all of that and stopped. I hadn't had a boyfriend in like 5 years. The amount of money that I was making wasn't changing at all. You know, it's like we think for college and you're going to be making a certain income, and then you do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and that's just how life goes. And I was finding that it wasn't quite working out that way. So I was building up a lot of frustration and resentment, and a lot of that was going inward, like I should have been doing something differently or could be doing something differently so that my life was turning out in a different way. And so what happened is I eventually just reached a place where I just kind of resigned from life and just decided to be stuck in this, you know, this rat race, which was quite normalized, I would say, because I think there's a lot of other people living in that space where there's a level of misery that's just normal.
Yeah, so much accepted,
so that
right?
We're not even really recognizing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of what I fell into. And there reached a point when, you know, nothing was changing. I wasn't very happy. And I went on a trip. I went to a friend's wedding in Hawaii. And while I was there, it was such an escape from what I'd gotten so used to. It's like I was in this beautiful place. I was surrounded with community and close friends, which I actually didn't feel like I had in the place that I was living at the time. It's like, you know, you pay for everything in advance, and so you're not worrying about anything. You just have that week where everything is just kind of relaxed, and there's a freedom in that. You're having a good time. The weather's great. We're at the ocean. You know, we're getting to connect with everyone. And I came back to my life after that trip and got to see just the stark contrast between where I was in vacation and where I was in my life. It helped me actually recognize how miserable I actually was in my life. And so that was kind of the thing that made me decide I need to do something different. So in the background, I kind of always had an interest in meditation and personal development, spiritual growth, but I hadn't really dove into that world at all yet. So I started Googling meditation, how to meditate, listening to podcasts, you know, just finding books and anything I can get my hands on just around this one very easy thing or simple thing to start, at least. So that's kind of where my into this world was. And so I started doing 5 minutes a day, and there was like a couple little things that I wanted to change right away. Like I was looking to find more of a community where I was at, people who were inspiring and motivating to me and who were, you know, a little more outdoorsy, like going hiking, doing activities rather than just going to work all week and then going to the bar, having some drinks, and complaining about our week. And so what had happened is about probably only a week or two after that, I found myself in a scenario where I met a group of people who had a hiking club and who invited me to their hike club, who introduced me to a whole community of people that were in my backyard that I had no idea about, called a conscious community. Who had all the interests that I had always wanted to dive into and learn about. And it just kind of fell in my lap. It was all right there once I had set the intention and taken a small action step towards shifting my life. So from there, I ended up meeting with a healer who started working with me weekly. And through that work, I just, so many different facets of my external reality started to shift in such drastic ways, that it eventually led me to a healing arts school, which has been one of the most incredible experiences of my life.
So when you say healer, what kind of healing do you mean? Is this more of like a...
What kind of healing?
Yeah.
So the work that I do is very hard to put into a specific modality, because there's so many different ways you can go with it, and the work is so individualized to each person who comes in to work with me or to see me. So I guess the simplest way to put it is that we are these whole beings, and there are things that happen along the way in our development from childhood up to adulthood, most of which happens in childhood, that starts to put filters on our life, and the things that we see, and the behaviors that we have that impede that vision and that realization of our wholeness. So what I'm doing with people is I've developed, I guess you could say, a skill set to help people point out the things that are blocking them and help them to integrate those experiences so that they can see more clearly, which gives them the ability to behave differently in life, which is going to attract the things that they want to have into their life. And there's several different ways that I do that with people, and it, again, it just depends on the individual. And the other thing that I think has been really powerful is that because I've done my own, I guess what we'll call inner work, and continue to do that, it's helped me to, I guess, rest in a space that is more clear than it used to be. And just by resting in that clearness, it's much easier to help reflect people back to them, their own essence, their own ability to create life from a place that's not contracted and scared and defended. Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So is that the type of healer you were seeking out?
You know, at the beginning, I had no idea what I was seeking. I just wanted to, really where it started was I wanted my external world to look differently, which is external meaning I wanted to be in a relationship that was healthy and loving and would last a long time. I wanted to have more financial security. I wanted to, you know, have a community of friends that I felt comfortable being myself and being open with. So I went in seeking those things to change. And what I guess stumbled across was something much more powerful than that, that those weren't actually the things that I was looking to change. I was looking to shift my internal world, which is more my thoughts and my emotions and how I treat myself and how I guess what I'm putting out. And from going inward and shifting those things, my external reality is what shifted down the line and is continuing to shift. So I guess what I was looking to get out of it changed throughout my experience of actually doing the healing work.
And that person who initially helped you, did they seek you out or did you seek them out? Like, who initiated that relationship?
I had heard about him from several people. And so he was just kind of on my mind, and I knew that I had to meet this person. And I actually had his phone number and meant to reach out and never did, and I ended up in a social setting where he was there. So it just kind of worked out the same way that I found the hike club. It just kind of fell in my lap once I set the intention.
So do you think you found that hiking club because you were, like, now looking for him and you were ready to find him? Or do you think it was just kind of like the stars aligned and... Or, like, were they always there and you just didn't realize it, I guess is what I'm asking? Or did you...
Yeah, you know, I think probably a little bit of both. What's hilarious is this whole community, it's called the San Diego conscious community, and it's a lot of their events, a lot of things that go on are literally about 10 minutes away from my house, and I had no idea this was here. I wasn't actively searching. I think I was too busy complaining about the way things were in my life and being upset about that I wasn't in a place to be open to having those circumstances align and for those people to come into my life. So it took me recognizing where I was and where I wanted to go to be able to open enough for that to happen.
So you were stuck in the mud. What was that metaphor that you told me the other day?
The stuck in the mud metaphor. So this is a metaphor from an author whose name is Eckhart Tolle. I'm not quite sure how to say it. That he uses in one of his books where he compares scenarios in real life to a situation where, let's say, there's a giant mud puddle and everyone you know is stuck in this mud puddle and you're all looking around at each other and no one knows anything different, so no one's quite acknowledging that there's something different to do, I guess you could say. And so that kind of, I guess, parallels to how there are a lot of people who are stuck in lives that are uncomfortable, but they're saying things like, oh, that's just life, or life is hard, or, you know, I'm sure we've all heard some of these or can relate to some of those personally. And so to get out of the mud puddle, you have to actually recognize what you're sitting in and that it is uncomfortable and that you don't actually want to be in it. So you have to see that you want something different. And then there's two ways where you can go from there. You can either get stuck in a negative feedback loop where you're complaining about the thing that you don't like, or you're constantly commiserating with the other people stuck in the mud with you, and that's not actually going to help you get out of that situation. So you have to acknowledge that you're uncomfortable or unhappy with a situation, and then you shift your attention to getting out of the mud puddle. And I guess, yeah, I love this metaphor because it just feels so appropriate to so many different areas of life, especially when you look at how other people are talking and commiserating with each other. You know, they say misery likes company. So I would encourage acknowledging the things that you might not be happy with in your life, and then start looking towards the things that you actually do want, and not just externally, but the way that you want to feel would be, I guess, the more appropriate direction to take.
Yeah, no, I get
getting
that.
Getting out of that mud puddle.
I use, I guess through our journey, me and Tom's, just on the focusing more on the nutrition side, we kind of just naturally come to this realization. I have like a matrix metaphor. Like after a little while, you can actually see the matrix. And once you see the matrix, you can't unsee it. You see what's really good. And it's just like the mud puddle. Once you realize you're in it, you're like, oh shit, this isn't right. This isn't normal. We have to change some things. And it's something that once that happens, it's profound and it'll change your life. It really will.
Yeah, I can get so behind that. I love the Matrix analogy.
Yeah,
that's
for
another
sure.
One of my favorites. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's crazy how many people are just stuck in that mud puddle, and it doesn't seem like they're ever going to get out. Because I don't know how many times I'll like hang out with my friends, and all they're doing is complaining about how much they hate their jobs, but they've been doing that for the last like 5 to 10 years. Like they just still complaining about it. It's like, well, you got to change then. I mean, first you got to change yourself, change what you want, and then after that, then you can start changing your situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the biggest tools you can use at the beginning when you find that you're one of those people who's constantly just fed up with your situation is to actually notice that you are complaining without making it wrong, without shaming yourself. Because, you know, I think a lot of people in that situation don't quite know how to change it, which is perfectly understandable. If you've lived a certain way your whole life, it's not going to be the easiest thing in the world to know what the steps are to take. So I would say that the most powerful thing you can do at the beginning is just actually to acknowledge the amount of time that you find yourself thinking negative thoughts, whether it's about yourself or about your situation, how much time you are speaking those thoughts out loud to other people, how much it actually gets self-perpetuated. I would just start by noticing that, because I think, like you're saying with the Matrix analogy, just in noticing what's happening and becoming aware of what your thoughts are, sometimes that very thing is actually enough to put a shift in motion, which for me, that shift was actually meditating 5 minutes a day, which then presented the situations to me that helped starting to get me out of my situation. So I think part of the most powerful thing here is just acknowledging where you're at and having compassion for those parts of yourself that are frustrated with your situation.
Yeah, those initial 5-minute meditation sessions, what did those look like? Were you in a room by yourself? Like, how did that get set up?
Yeah, so I had no idea what I was doing. I started just, in a room by myself, watching my breath and spending most of the time getting really frustrated because I thought that meditation was getting to this perfectly relaxed, peaceful place where you have no thoughts in your head, and that was definitely not happening. So I spent most of that time just being frustrated and telling myself I'm going to will through this. So I have a very different view of meditation now. I don't even like using the word meditation personally. I like just self-reflection more, because I think it's less about trying to will yourself into this state that's relaxed and more about noticing what is arising moment to moment. And if that's frustration, then you just learned something new about yourself, and you got to see how often frustration is maybe the leading emotion that you're experiencing in your life. And then you can take a step back from that and have compassion for that part of yourself that has been feeling frustration probably for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you said you like to call it self-reflection. So it sounds like you can do that anywhere. You don't need a special room for that or a special pillow setup, anything.
That's so true. I love that you're able to catch that too, because I think we have this idea, now that meditation is becoming a more popular thing in our culture, we have this idea that you have to put aside time. You have to be alone. You can't have anything else in your mind. All these circumstances we set up for ourselves, and then who's going to actually do it then? So, I like self-reflection, because really the purpose of meditation is to become aware of what's happening in the present moment. And you're right, you can do that anywhere. I make mundane life tasks an opportunity to practice self-awareness and self-reflection, because that very easy thing, just by noticing what's happening for you, is huge. It is the first incremental shift that will impact your life in a very, very profound way if you maintain that practice.
So it's not about quieting that voice, it's actually listening to that voice and becoming aware of what your body's telling you?
Exactly.
You know, that's so funny, because like nobody really thinks of it that way. I don't think I've ever heard somebody put it into those terms, but that makes total sense.
Yeah, it's a reframe. I think when we think meditation is supposed to be done in a very specific way, we end up blocking ourselves from the thing that we actually want, which is, a sense of freedom, because we end up making what's happening and what's there wrong. Which kind of keeps you even more stuck in whatever you're stuck in. It's the saying, resistance is persistence. So it's like you're keeping those patterns in place by wanting to change them. It's in the noticing where it gives them room to move and to start to shift.
I want to take it back a little bit. Did you get your degree in exercise physiology?
I got my degree in kinesiology.
Okay, did you always...
So okay. I actually have a huge interest and a background in physical body, which has been really cool to see how all this work that I've been doing in the last few years has fit in with that background as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that's handy. Did you always consider yourself like a physically fit, healthy person? Was that always important to you?
Absolutely. I grew up playing sports. Fitness has always been a huge part of my life, as well as nutrition. I've always been really interested in taking care of my body, understanding. I love body mechanics and knowing what our physical bodies are capable of. So, yeah, that's always been a fascination and a passion point for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's something called, I'm sure you already know about, the healthy user bias. And it kind of, it's an argument used for various studies where the outcome might seem a little iffy. And it kind of talks about there are other factors besides specifically nutrition that affect overall health. So now that you kind of fell into this new community, and you obviously are a big part of it now, do you feel healthier just overall because of that sense of community?
Yeah, 100%. Like 1,000%.
Yeah.
I think it's such a huge factor. I totally agree with you in that, you know, health is extends out further than just our physical bodies in the things that we eat and the activities that we do with movement and fitness. I think it goes into our relationships that we have with other people, our communities. It goes into our inner world, what our thoughts and feelings are, how we're treating ourselves. You know, it extends into, and for me personally, I like exploring more of the spiritual realm and what that means. Everyone, you know, has a little bit of a different idea and a different approach to that. But I do think it's this this holarchy, and it's all interrelated and interwebbed.
Oh, yeah.
And it all just kind of fits together in a pretty magical way.
You know, you mentioned spirituality. Were you like raised in the church at all growing up as a kid? Did you grow up with faith at all?
You know, it was never a huge part of my life. When I was younger, we went to church, not regularly. It was something that I had learned about, but my family was never really pushing that on us, or we weren't really immersed in that religious world. So I guess I came from a pretty open space, to choose my own beliefs and, there was never anything that was very strongly imposed on me when it comes to religious structures or spirituality.
Yeah, I can relate. My, very similar with me growing up, my dad always talked about spirituality rather than specific religions. And he always would say, like, this is my church. When he would talk about his house and his home, you know, that's where he would practice his faith. And I always kind of picked up on that. I like that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, most of the major religions are, I don't know, like 99% the same when it comes to the messaging behind it. Like where they argue is like who delivered the message and like the 1% that's different. But it's all like the same message. Like, you know, do unto others as they would do unto you. Be nice to other people. They'll be nice to you. Like that's this pretty much the underlying message. Just be a good person.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's some fundamental truths in a lot of religions and most religions. And then, you know, there's things that get lost in the details of how that's, how that's presented and how those messages have been changed and manipulated over time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I do think there is... I guess you could find a positive message from them. I guess, and it's really just what you make of it, right?
Yeah, like everything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So why do people get stuck in the mud?
Ah, that is a very good question. I'm glad you asked. So, I'm going to take this all the way back to child development when we're younger. Because I think that is where a lot of this begins. And I've had a lot of personal experiences that have taken me to this place also, and I've seen a lot of people have very incredible shifts from going back here. So we all are raised by... by caretakers. And, you know, our caretakers are our survival, basically. You know, they're providing us with our food and our shelter and our safety. And more than that, they're acting as an attachment figure. So there's bonding that comes into the equation as well, that I believe is a very huge part of survival. You know, they've done studies in places like war-torn countries where there are a lot of orphaned children, and they are given, you know, all the things that a physical body would need to survive, you think, like food and shelter, all of that. But they're not held, and the babies actually will die because it's such a fundamental need to have connection with human beings, especially when you are that tiny and dependent on one for your survival. So I just wanted to throw that out there. So that's established.
I've seen those studies done on monkeys as well. They tested it on monkeys that weren't held, and it messed the monkeys up real bad.
Yeah, it's really incredible to see just how important it is. And it's harder to see that, how much we need connection and interconnection rather than dependency in adult life. But it's a little easier to see when you take it back to babies like that, where there are so many more needs that are dependent on that relationship. So to expand on that, as we grow and go through different developmental stages when we're younger, again, we're depending on that relationship. So when there's something with our caretakers, so when there's something that goes wrong in that relationship where the parents or the caretakers aren't able to attune to the child properly, there is a defensive pattern that's created where because the child needs the parents to survive and that relationship is threatened in some way, and it can look like more than just, you know, a traumatic situation. It can actually be chronic disappointments over time and things that we would actually see as normal in our culture may actually feel like a threat to survival for a young child who's still developing. So what happens in those situations, and we can go a little bit more into what those look like specifically, is that the child will defend themselves in some way. They'll find a strategy that works for them.
Would that look like something as simple as like your dad not showing up for baseball practice or your mom not going to the teacher conference, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it even goes earlier than that. I think a lot of these patterns actually get developed from, you know, 5 years old and younger, and then they're perpetuated as the kid grows up and has continual disappointments later into life and, you know, into their teenage years. So I do think it gets developed a little younger, and then it's just more solidified when you get into those more elementary school ages.
Okay.
So what would that look like later on in life if you've experienced that trauma?
Mm-hmm. So you figure if, you know, you're that young and you find out that you have a strategy that works for you, you're able to behave or show up in a way that keeps you safe, or keeps you connected to your caregiver, which ends up looking like you abandoning your own needs. That's one possible way it can go, because staying connected with that person is, you know, the ultimate goal at that age. So it becomes so ingrained that it actually gets locked into your system in a very physical way down to, you know, the cells in your body. So because those behaviors are so ingrained, we lose conscious awareness of it. So we're not actually aware that we're defending a lot of the time. So what happens in your adult life is, say there's a situation where you are triggered. And when I say triggered, I mean overwhelmed or upset in some way. And it can be as simple as, you know, you're in a car and somebody cuts you off. And, you know, just look at how many people have road rage and will go absolutely crazy at that very thing. And you'll notice in your adult life, your life is actually not being threatened in that particular situation. But what's happening is it's activating something that's deeper than that. That's why people have such an emotional response to things that aren't life-threatening. So it's activating that defense because you're so used to using that specific defense that it's going to be the automatic reaction now to things that are threatening in your life in some way. So what's happening is you're actually responding in a way to these threats that is almost, I would say, linked to your primal brain, which says, you know, my life is under attack right now. So that's why, you know, a lot of the times people will have such intense responses to things that aren't actually matching what the response level is, the emotional level is. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, because, like, stress to us, you know, all through, like, our evolution was, hey, there's a tiger that's about to eat us. And now, like, stress manages as, oh, hey, I'm going to be late. Well, like, you weren't late for anything even, you know, like, 1,000 years ago. What were you going to be late for? Like, you didn't have to worry about that type of stressor. So, like, the way we interpret stress is completely different. And we, like, think that we need to run away from a tiger, but in reality, it's just something completely non-life-threatening.
Yeah, exactly. And I would even go so far as to say when that primal brain is activated, that child part is activated as well. So we're actually going into a part of ourselves that is, you know, could be as young as 2, 3, 4 years old, where their life actually did feel like it was threatened because their survival was dependent on the caretaker. And if caretaker isn't showing up or goes away, or isn't in connection with the kid when they need them, then of course they're going to feel like their life is threatened.
All right, that's the end of part one with our interview with Felicia. We decided to break it up into two parts. The interview did run pretty long, and there was just so much great information in there. We didn't want to kind of overwhelm people with this one long episode. So please tune in next week to part two.
We don't really have a tip of the week this week other than just check out one of the amazing resources that we have attached with our show notes. Either that podcast episode with Dr. Paul Saladino or one of the two books that Felicia recommends, Attached or The 5 Personality Patterns.
Yeah, so check out those books, and you can find the show notes at the website tntwellnessandnutrition.com. You can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. Any questions, comments, or concerns, please reach out.
Yeah, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Please rate and subscribe to our show. That's how more people can come and find us. If you've already subscribed, unsubscribe, subscribe again, boost our numbers up a little bit. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.